Welcome to some amazing discussions from the voices of young America. Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. In the next hour, you'll hear from leading women in academics, business, entertainment, and more. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are so glad to welcome our guest today to the show, Jalak Jobanputra, who is a very accomplished investor both in America and abroad. So we'll be able to have a very interesting discussion here today. Jalak, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
We're very excited once again. We've talked to investors before on the show, and I think one of the most incredible discussions that we get to have is with the investors that do things in other countries as well, because you are able to have a different perspective with different economies out there. And so my first question to you, Jalak, is how your international experiences, and by all means go into how many countries you've been to and all of that, how have those experiences influenced your investment philosophy?
Sure. So it started a very long time ago when I was born in Nairobi. We moved to the United States when I was young, but I spent a lot of my childhood going to the developing world, including Africa and India. And that was a time in the 1980s where these countries were even less developed than they are today. And I was always struck when I was traveling to these countries how much innovation and resourcefulness there was in these countries. And a lot of it also did come from women as well as men. And so I grew up with a perspective of understanding the potential of people around the world outside of the developed world, where we are blessed with a lot of opportunities and education and simple things like running water and plumbing. Mm-hmm. And so always brought to my work a perspective of figuring out how to harness the potential of the rest of the world for the good of the world, and started off in investment banking and certainly worked in New York as well as London, which allowed me to work on mergers and acquisitions around the world, including India and Israel. And then really caught the internet bug in the early days of the internet. In 97, I moved back to the United States and launched a company that distributed financial research online, and got into the nitty-gritty of starting a company from scratch, and also learning to code and learning more about the internet. And that's when I became even more excited about the potential for the internet as a medium to link people from all around the world and give access to information to folks around the world.
Excellent. And, you know, there are so many different companies that are now coming together that are in the tech industry. So I'm sure it's very important to have a background in that. But from what I understand, you weren't always interested in investments, correct?
Well, it's been pretty much my whole career. I've been investing for 17 years. Now, if you go back, you know, when I was younger, I was, I'd say, more of the creative type. I was a pretty serious ballet dancer for much of my childhood, and had an injury when I was about 13 or 14, mm-hmm. Which made me start, you know, exploring other hobbies and passions. And I have always enjoyed writing. I still enjoy writing, although I don't have as much time for it as I would like to these days, and was playing with the idea of becoming a novelist or a journalist. So actually, when I entered undergrad, and then I took an economics class kind of on a whim. I hadn't been exposed to business before, and ended up loving the class and learning more about business, and again, how business could be used as a tool for development and for positive social impact.
Awesome. Now, when you entered the investment industry, you know, it's common knowledge that there simply are not enough female investors. So what was it like to be a female investor in that industry?
Sure. I'm glad the statistics are finally being released, because I felt that, you know, there's been a lot of focus on the lack of female entrepreneurs or women getting funded, and I think we need to look at who's also making the funding decisions to really understand why the numbers are where they are right now in this day and age. And I think the latest study showed that there are only 4%, and I think it's two studies. I think one is at 4%, the other is at 6%. Either way, they're very low numbers of mm-hmm. women in senior positions in the venture capital industry. So I've always viewed myself as extremely lucky to be doing what I do, because I love it so much. I see how there is an avenue to have that positive social impact, as well as impact entrepreneurs in a positive way. And I view myself as very much an enabler of that process as an investor. But I've always felt that we need to have more diverse perspectives overall. I mean, at the end of the day, venture capital is funding the future of innovation, and we can't have just one demographic decide what that will be, especially when we now have a world of people, 6-7 billion people who mm-hmm. who are coming online and using technology in ways that, you know, we sitting here in the United States would never even imagine.
Exactly. And Jalik, you have expertise in venture capital, impact investing, media, technology, but you're also an advocate for many causes, and one of them is immigration. We'll talk about that later in the discussion. But does your interest in these different causes impact what kind of businesses that you decide to invest in?
So first and foremost, I am a venture capitalist, and I do look for companies that have the potential for outsized returns. So I invest very early, often when there is a team of 3 to 5 people, and will put in the initial capital, often sit on boards, and really help the entrepreneur make decisions and grow the company. And so I always look at the team, look at the market, look at the product, and then within that framework, I look for entrepreneurs who are very mission-oriented, who mm-hmm. Care about using technology or building products that is going to reach underserved markets. And by the way, I also view that as not mutually exclusive to the financial return. You know, I think that if you're able to serve underserved markets, that often leads to opportunity and a large financial return. So I'm excited to be able to combine, you know, that outlook and prove that out through the portfolio. I invest in financial services, technology, media technology. I've done quite a bit in the wireless space, including a portfolio company in the wireless mesh networking space. So these are all areas that are kind of ripe for disruption. The next generation of companies, really large companies, are being built and funded right now, and a lot of them will have that positive social impact.
Right. And just talking about these technology companies, they're relatively new, and I'm sure that that's impacted your investment philosophy over the years, right?
When you say that they're relatively new, what are you referring to?
I've talked to other investors before, and they say that now more than ever, they're seeing more and more companies that are in the tech industry trying to come up with the newest and the greatest thing. So has the encounter with different companies that are in that industry affected the way that you look for investment opportunities?
As I mentioned before, I started investing in 1999, and my whole career, I've seen a lot of innovation in technology. So I don't know whether we have more technology companies than we did back then. I think there is certainly a media awareness around a lot of them now, and it's much less expensive for an entrepreneur to get a company started just in terms of pure, you know, technology costs, and server and storage costs have gone down exponentially, you know, over the last 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. So my view is that there's just as many, you know, great investment opportunities now as I've seen, you know, 15 years ago. So that's what keeps me certainly in the industry and has kept me in the industry all these years. What we're now seeing that is different is more of the globalization of technology, where it was much more of a localized phenomenon in the Valley or in Boston. Mm-hmm. And we've seen New York really emerge over the last 5-6 years in a very big way. And we're seeing pockets of innovation in Bangalore, Mumbai, Delhi, Jordan, you know, all throughout Latin America. So that's really what's exciting to see, and I think has expanded the overall number of technology companies to invest in.
Perfect. And that's a great segue, because when we come back from our break, we're going to talk more about globalization and how that affects the investment industry as well. For all of our listeners out there, connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food, beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Join us every week for the Paper Hope Street Team. None of our topics are off the table. This is a program that you can listen to and discuss with your family. From the pages of the Paper Hope blog to the internet radio airwaves, we'll talk about the topics you want to talk about, such as friendship and relationships, or some more controversial issues about sex, drugs, and underage drinking. Join the Paper Hope Street Team live every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Kids channel. Let's talk soon.
You're listening to Voice America Kids. Real kids, real talk.
You are
radio.
Listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Once again, I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are continuing our conversation with our guest today, Jalak Jobanputra. And before we went to the break, we talked a little bit about Jalak's background in investments and the different opportunities that are there, both in tech companies and in global market in general. And we're going to continue that off of that point. Because you've had so many international experiences and you've you've been able to taste the markets of different countries, what do you think is the importance of having different perspectives on investing or in the creation of various business ventures because of the growing globalization that we have?
Well, I think it's an awareness of that innovation can come really from anywhere, and that there are certain markets around the world that have a lot of pent-up demand. So in the United States, we have been used to a pretty robust you know, banking system, a retail network of stores and malls to go to. And so in a lot of ways, we have, you know, what I call legacy infrastructure in this country that's made living here very convenient compared to a lot of other places in the world. But what we're seeing now is that technology and tech-related businesses, and I would say mobile, you know, and the mobile networks and the high-bandwidth mobile networks and mobile phones have allowed folks in, you know, China to now be able to buy whatever they need off of their phone and have it delivered to them. And there's studies that show that, you know, the Chinese are much further ahead or have been using, you know, mobile commerce much more than counterparts in countries that had developed sooner, because they didn't have the bricks and mortar retail stores to go to, and all of a sudden they had access to consumption through their phone, and that was the avenue that they used. In India, we're seeing a lot of the same things. As more of these consumers get the smartphones, they're able to do a lot more with a smartphone than just the regular, what we call the feature phone, which is, you know, a phone that is not necessarily connected to the internet and doesn't have apps for different things. So I look around the world and see where they are in terms of, you know, consumption of different services. And I think the latest numbers show that still only 25% of the world is on smartphones. So that shows that there's still, you know, 75% who are going to experience, you know, the added benefits and usage that come with that. And that's a lot of growth. And it's not going to necessarily happen in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've also talked about the role that immigration has on the environment of entrepreneurship in this country. These different countries, like you just mentioned, like China and India, they have these great opportunities. But when immigrants come to America and start setting up business ventures in this country, what effect does that have on our economy?
Well, Silicon Valley was really built by entrepreneurs. I mean, Andy Grove, who started Intel, is an immigrant. We have, you know, a number of immigrants from India who have launched businesses, including Sun Microsystems, that became large, you know, forces in the technology world. So I think we just have to take a look at our very recent past to see how positive immigration has impacted our economy and the growth and opportunities and jobs for everybody in the country. And I, you know, think it's absolutely essential that we continue that legacy of welcoming, you know, immigrants. And often, you know, I'm an immigrant, and I looked at my parents who started their life again in the United States, and they worked really hard to rebuild a life. They left a lot behind to create a better opportunity for future generations of the family, and they worked really hard to do so. And I think there is that hunger and drive that a lot of these immigrants have that they harness in ways that are very positive for the country as a whole. Mm-hmm. And that we've certainly seen it in the tech sector and, you know, across the board in other sectors. So it's that's one of the reasons I've been very involved in the whole debate and conversation, just to show and reinforce what a positive force immigration has been to this country.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, diversity is definitely something that can help grow ideas, and maybe things that the country hasn't really thought about can be brought with the ideas of immigrants. So I think that's really important as well. Now, how would you describe the investment culture in America as a whole?
Well, we've had a culture, you know, I'd say a great culture around venture capital and taking risks and funding entrepreneurs. I mean, it started off in Silicon Valley, and it's now expanded to other parts of the country. I think it's a great tradition of entrepreneurship and helping fund that entrepreneurship. I think, you know, we need to start taking it to the next level and saying, okay, let's take that tradition and make sure we're staying with the times and making sure that we have a diverse group of funders and venture capitalists who are funding the next generation of companies. So I think we have a great tradition of it. I do think to stay competitive with the rest of the world, we have to make sure that we're certainly reflecting the times and not caught up in past successes. And I think diversity is an important piece of that.
Excellent. Now let's talk about your firm, Future Perfect Ventures. If you could tell us more about what Future Perfect Ventures does and the type of businesses that it helps.
Sure. I launched Future Perfect Ventures about a year ago, and it was response to several gaps I saw in the market after having been a VC for 16, 17 years. I was very excited to start the fund in New York because I view New York as very much in the early days of its potential as a technology and innovation hub. But we've seen incredible companies being built here, including Etsy and Tumblr and On Deck Capital and many more that may be lesser known, but also having great impact. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing a number of entrepreneurs and investors come out of, you know, that early ecosystem of successes and experience. So I think it's a very exciting place to have a fund. I also saw a gap of early stage experience capital. So I, you know, I've been lucky to invest out of the valley from 99 to 03. So that was the boom and the bust. And I believe you learn just as much or even more during a downturn than you do during the booming times. And I invested through two of those downturns, so the 01 and then the 08 here in New York, and feel really great about the experience I'm able to bring to the entrepreneurs and the companies that I invest in terms of helping them navigate not only through, you know, booming times, but also when things do start to change and still be able to survive and thrive in those environments. So we've talked a lot about globalization. I think venture capital has traditionally been a very kind of localized business. I mean, there are jokes about how, you know, investors out in Silicon Valley or Sandhill Road will only, you know, drive a certain perimeter around their office to go meet with entrepreneurs. And I think the times have changed from that, where a global perspective is valuable to an entrepreneur sitting anywhere. And I've certainly found that to be the case with the entrepreneurs I've invested in, where I'm able to bring to them this global network that I've built and help them think about expansion abroad or customers abroad or building products in places outside of the U.S. So that's been exciting how that thesis has played out. And then going back to the core thesis of the fund, it's around what I call interpretive intelligence. And when I look at all the data that's being created, you know, I say it's the digital crumbs that we're all leaving when we're opening up our phone, when we're making purchases on our phone, when machines start to talk to each other, and all of that data can have value if it's harnessed and analyzed in the right way, and it can have value back to the individual and who's kind of giving up that data, and so. I look for entrepreneurs who are thinking through the analytics around that data and specifically in different verticals. I mentioned some of them before, mm-hmm. financial services, mm-hmm. Media, and you know, making sure that that technology becomes more seamless with our lives instead of where I think we're still being overwhelmed by the technology. I foresee a day when it'll actually add value in a very seamless way, behind the scenes, when we don't even know that it's working.
Right, right. And Jolik, we're going to go to our next break, but to all of our listeners, be sure to stay tuned with us. Connect with us by going to Twitter, and you can also use the hashtags, #WomenInvest, #GirlsInvest, and #WeForShe. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Become a teenager and are ready to move on to the next phase of your years. The squeals and screams are replaced by slightly less squeals and screams, and you're expected to act a little more grown up. Tune in to Life at 14 for the answers and support you need to get through this time in your life. Your hosts have some amazing life experiences, and because of this, they have the know-how to get you ready for what's next. Life at 14, Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Kids channel.
Sometimes we may sound strange, but remember, we're just kids with opinions. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
There's so much going on in the tech field. The tech team is here to sort it all out so that you know exactly what you need to get and what you should avoid. In this age of cell phones and text messaging and new discoveries every single day, you need to be informed. We'll bring you previews of new products, technology news, and help you make the right decision when you are out there buying that new MP3 player, cell phone, or mobile device. Don't do a thing until you've tuned in to the Tech Team, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids.
Looking for an on-air community where teens talk and the world listens? Tune in to Express Yourself, an entertaining adolescent fusion radio program where passion and possibility populate the airwaves. Our vivacious teen hosts and star-studded field reporters from around the country offer stimulating segments and invigorating viewpoints connecting with the world campus of young people. We'll talk with cool celebrities, exhilarating experts, and tenacious teens with experience. Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids. Express yourself. What do you want to do? Are you interested in the performing arts? If so, make sure you tune in to the Angel and Harmony Show. Angel and Harmony have experience singing, acting, and performing in general, and want to help you live out your dreams of the future. Whether you are interested in acting, modeling, dancing, or singing, this is the show for you. We'll even give you the scoop on being behind the scenes if you're a little shy. The Angel and Harmony Show is heard live every Thursday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
What's cooking? Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food, beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are joined by our guest today, Jolik Jobanputra. I also failed to mention that Anu Bardwaj of Women Investing in Women, of course, says her hellos. She is currently unavailable to join this conversation. They're setting up some offices in San Diego, so we're very excited about that. But back to our conversation with Jolik. We're just talking about Future Perfect Ventures, and I'd love to know from you, what do you believe makes your firm unique?
Well, it's many of the things I just discussed. I would say that it's the combination of having 20 years of experience in the technology sector and seeing how technology usage has developed over that time period and where the opportunities are, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years. That, as well as the global perspective of being able to help entrepreneurs think through expansion, not only in places like India or Europe, but Indonesia, Mexico, Brazil. I have a portfolio company in Nairobi and another one in process that's addressing the Nigerian market. So it's exciting to be able to build a truly global portfolio of entrepreneurs who are building solutions for the world. And the most exciting time is when I can get them together and make connections amongst them to where they learn from each other. And it's a unique mixture of entrepreneurs, and they always find value in what we've built at Future Perfect Ventures.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think one of the most impressive and exciting things about venture capital firms is that investing in a company often means more than just providing financial resources. There are elements of consulting and mentorship involved, correct?
Yes, I would say it's really being an enabler to the entrepreneurs, and sometimes it means being, a psychologist. Sometimes it means being a recruiter. Sometimes it means being a mentor. And I'm always thinking about my portfolio companies and how someone I meet at an event somewhere could be helpful to an entrepreneur. I read an article that makes me think of a new business or product idea for one of the companies. And they're used to getting emails from me, and I always say, my mind is always kind of working for them, and it's really up to them to filter what makes sense for them. But I don't invest in a company unless I'm truly passionate about what they're doing and I'm able to provide all of that additive support other than just the capital.
That's great. Now, I'm curious, how many of the ventures that you help to invest in are owned by females?
So right now, it's probably around 60 to 70% with female co-founders. It hasn't been an overt strategy of mine, certainly by being a minority female myself, I have a blog that I very much put my point of view out there. I do attract a very diverse group of entrepreneurs, and so I think the portfolio is certainly a reflection of the entrepreneurs and the inbound deal flow that I get. So it's exciting to see, it's has a large ratio of women. It has underrepresented minority founders, and again, none of this was necessarily an overt strategy, but one that I knew would result from just virtue of who I am and the things I talk about.
Excellent. Now, what's the name of your blog?
It's called The Barefoot VC.
Awesome. So we encourage our listeners to search that up, and I'm sure it's very, very interesting. I actually got to look at it myself, and it's very informative, and you have some great videos, and it's definitely worth your while to look it up.
Thank you.
Now, what advice do you have for entrepreneurs seeking capital? I'm sure you've seen some that do a great job and some that do not such a great job. So what advice do you have?
So I think it's important before an entrepreneur seeks out funding to figure out what exactly their ask is going to be, how much capital they think they'll need to get to the next milestone, funding. And often I say, gather enough capital for at least 18 months, even though, you know, we're certainly seeing a compression of that. But you want to be able to have enough capital in case, you know, product releases get delayed, or, you know, there are just issues in terms of customer contracts. And what I've learned over time is things often take longer than expected. And it's, you know, we do hear stories of the reverse, but that's often the exception rather than the rule. And then once the entrepreneur figured out what amount makes sense with them, that's when you can really start to target investors. And entrepreneurs are busy, investors are busy. So the more you can do research on the investor and figure out why they would be the right fit, why you want them involved with the company, and almost make a case for that, it just makes the investor's job easier instead of just feeling like they're one of, you know, 100 investors being contacted from a spreadsheet.
Perfect. Now, would you be able to tell us maybe a story or a little bit about one of the ventures that you invested in, or a success story or something like that?
Sure. Well, I have several success stories out of previous funds. I can talk about a few companies or one company in my portfolio that, you know, I'm very excited about and that represents a lot around the thesis of the fund, and the company is called Abra. They just won the launch festival last February or this past February in San Francisco, and they're using the blockchain network, and we hear a lot about Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is built upon an infrastructure called the blockchain. They're using that network to create much lower cost money transfer across borders. So you can go open up the Abra app if you're sitting in California to send money to someone in Mexico. They'll open it on their end, and they'll see a network of tellers around them that are mobile. So if you think about how Uber drivers, you know, drive around and then you know, you get matched with a driver when you need one. This is, you're getting matched with a teller to be able to cash out the money that's been sent to you. Mm-hmm. And so it's really using, you know, new infrastructure, which is the blockchain, which I'm very excited about. I have six portfolio companies in that space. And addressing the high cost of cross-border remittances and money flows, especially for smaller amounts of capital, and then also taking advantage of mobility and the fact that we don't need these fixed place kiosks to be able to cash out capital now. We have tellers that are mobile. So the company's in beta now. It's very exciting how disruptive, you know, they can potentially be, and I think it's very representative of a lot of the different, you know, touch points Future Perfect Ventures has.
Very exciting. And we are going to go to our next break, our last break in the conversation. And when we get back, we're going to have some tying up questions and get to know more about you, Jalak. And for all of our listeners out there, remember to go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, and hashtag weforshe. We'll be right back.
What about the world concerns you? Is it future success? Is it world issues? Are you just looking to change the world in general? Tune in to What Up World. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, or what you look like. Everyone is entitled to the same chance for success. Follow your dreams. Move forward. Make a difference. Tune in to What Up World every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You're listening to Voice America Kids. Real kids, real talk
radio.
You
are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at hashtag Women Invest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to wrap up our great conversation with our guest today, Jalik Jobinputra. Now, Jalik, as an investor, I'm sure that you, like you said in the last part of the conversation, there have been some great success stories, but I'm sure that not all of them are success stories. So what does a venture capitalist do if one of the businesses goes under?
Yeah, so one thing I always tell entrepreneurs before I invest in them is that communication is key. Any experienced venture investor knows that, you know, it's not a linear path to success, and there will be, you know, dips along the way, and some of it is controllable by the entrepreneur, and some of it is just, you know, macro events that can happen. And so the key is to really communicate with the investors and advisors and be able to correct or mitigate, you know, some of these challenges along the way. And part of it is, you know, if a company is having challenges with, say, they had a deal or two with customers that fell through, well, getting the investors together who, you know, often have pretty large networks and figuring out that plan B of, okay, who do we go to now? And let's put our heads together and make some introductions and get the company back on track. And sometimes it's a matter of a little bit more, you know, funding. And if there's a good case for it, you know, investors will put in the capital. If there's, you know, milestones that are that need to be hit and flipped a little bit. And so I think in a lot of cases, entrepreneurs just wait too long before reaching out for these conversations. And they need to remember that investors are invested in the company. So they are going to be motivated to help out and correct things if things are not going well. And there's often cases where it's possible to do a sale of the company and be able to return at least, you know, some of the value back to the investors and the entrepreneur, because a lot of times there has been value that's been created. But if you wait too long there, then, you know, it's a long process and you can run out of money in that process.
Mm-hmm. And as an investor, how do you define success? Is it more than just making money?
Well, first and foremost, because I run a venture capital fund and I have limited partners who've invested their capital in me, it is returns oriented. So I'm looking to, as a whole fund and looking at the portfolio holistically, return a multiple of the fund back to my investors. That's my job and that's my goal. And there are certainly lots of choices in the way I invest the capital. And I think nowadays we have a very kind of global market of companies to invest in, lots of upside in companies because we're seeing technology usage just being very ubiquitous, right? Everyone interacts with technology these days, whereas 10, 15 years ago, it was a very select group of folks. And so I feel like the opportunities for that financial return are actually greater than ever. And I also believe that in that process of getting those financial returns, there's a lot of positive impact that can be made along the way.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the most fulfilling aspect of what you do? Why do you do what you do?
Oh, I feel so lucky every day that I get to do what I do. You definitely have, days that are tougher than others, which is the case, I think, for everybody. But on balance, most of the time it doesn't feel like a job because I get to be around the most innovative companies, really brilliant entrepreneurs who want to positively impact the world through technology, and I get to talk about a lot of the values that are important to me, and surround myself with others who have those same goals. So I can't think of a better time to be doing this, and just am in awe of so many of so much of the talent that exists out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, we asked this question to almost all of our guests, and I think it's interesting to get the perspective of an actual investor in interpreting this question. But what do you believe it means, or to you, to invest in a woman or to invest in a girl?
Well, I'm lucky in that I come from a lineage of some very strong women, my grandmother, my mother, and I never really saw limits in terms of what I could achieve and what I was capable of because of that strong support system. But I certainly know that does not exist in a lot of other places, including here in the United States. I think a lot of women and girls don't realize what their full potential or can be, and I am just thrilled to be able to help them see that and encourage that in women and girls. And when I graduated business school in '99, before I started at Intel Capital, I took 5 months and put together a UNDP project, United Nations Development Project, in Tanzania, and lived in Dar es Salaam, trained women entrepreneurs around the country. And this was, pre-cell phone and tech really being out there. It was women who were starting these small businesses in the food processing industry. And the talent I saw in these remote villages where they were, with just a little bit of marketing training or business training, what they could do and what they could imagine for themselves was pretty phenomenal. And then you could just see how they knew that was going to impact where they would be able to send their children to school. And what a role model that would provide, not only for their daughters, but for their sons, who then would have a new, respect and appreciation of women and women in business. So I think it's very much a multiplicative effect when you do support women. I think it's huge to be able to instill that confidence and self-esteem where, frankly, in society, a lot of women have messages that are contrary to that. And so that's really part of what I consider my life calling, where I have been very supported. And, the more women and, I'd say underprivileged folks that I can reach out to with my story and really support their dreams, the better I think the world will be.
Excellent. And Jolik, we so enjoyed having you on our show today. I think it was a great conversation, and I think our listeners will be able to get a lot out of it.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Great. And we want to encourage all of our listeners as well to once again connect with us on social media. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/womeninvesting, or on Twitter, you can comment using the hashtags WomenInvest, #GirlsInvest, and #WeForShe. We'd also like to thank all of our listeners for listening as well. You've been listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. The show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the first radio network for women and girls for Voice America Kids and Kidstar Radio. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thank you for joining us today. Your hosts will be back next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, for another edition of Women Investing in Women and Girls on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll talk then.
My name is Lindsay Marie from Bookworm. Now from the Kidstar Album of the Month, here is the Whiz Pops and their song, Blue Wave. that was the Whiz Pops from the Kidstar Album of the Month.